Welcome to the Story Story Night podcast, where you hear true stories on a theme, recorded live on stage and without notes. I'm your host, Jessica Holmes. Today, we bestow our final stories from our May 2011 show, Parental Guidance, Stories of Direction and Misdirection from Mom and Dad. First, featured storyteller Jenna Thornborough, speaking during the painful period of her paternal grandmother's passing, shows how she embodies the spirit of her father abroad, then at home.
To start off, tonight is my grandma's 87th birthday, and I wanted to wish her happy birthday. My grandma is an incredible woman. She's just been one of the most wonderful people in my life. She's the type of grandma that growing up always had baked goods in the cookie jar and pies on the counter, always knew the right thing to say, and is funnier than anybody you'll ever meet. And last year for her 86th birthday, my cousin was cooking dinner, and he got out a bottle of tequila, and he took a shot, and she went, "I've never tried any of that. Let me try some of that." And we all went, "Oh, Grandma, I don't know." She said, no, I've never tried any of that. Give me that." So we went through how to do the salt and gave her a lime wedge and gave her the shot of tequila. And she took the salt, took the shot, and I don't even think she put the lime in her mouth. And she went, "Oh, that's good. Give me another one." And for those on the story committee, I'm sure you're going, "What is she doing? This is nothing like the story that she submitted." And it's it's true. It's not. But with my weekend and the fact that it's my grandma's birthday, I thought that I really should tie my grandma into this story. And so I'll start with the story that I submitted. My dad, when he was in college, he took a break and went to the Peace Corps in Ecuador, and that must have ignited his love for travel. And my mom grew up all over the United States. Both of her brothers were born in Morocco. Her dad was the pilot to the president of Zaire, and so she was very much worldly already. And it was no surprise to find both of them in England being steward and stewardess for Pan Am Airlines, and that's how they met. And they met each other, immediately fell in love, and had dated, known each other, I'm guessing maybe 6 weeks or so. It wasn't very long at all. And they both got furloughed. And my dad knew somebody that was in the Peace Corps in Afghanistan and told my mom, "I'm going to Afghanistan to go be with a friend that I know." And she said, "Oh, I've always wanted to go to Afghanistan." And my dad always would recount this story with a twinkle in his eye, and he would say, "I knew she liked me then." So the beginning of the relationship really was abroad. They lived in Afghanistan for about a year, and they spent their time being uncommunicative and doing stupid stuff. They floated down the Mekong, and this was not too long after the Vietnam War, and definitely went into places with my mom that they shouldn't have gone, in Afghanistan and Pakistan. And so by the time I came along on the scene, I'd heard all these stories, and when they would tell the stories, the world would just disappear, and they'd tag team their story, and there's just tangible love between them. And I'd have random people from Afghanistan show up, and my grandfather lived in Belgium, and I just knew that I wanted to travel, so I did. And I spent about a cumulative 3 years abroad doing incredibly stupid stuff and being uncommunicative. So I did things like walk right up to an orangutan in Borneo to take a picture. I decided to ride a bike about 150 kilometers past a check spot in Tibet because I wanted to see what we weren't supposed to see. And then I spent my time hitchhiking back across the country by myself. And I drank some of the Varanasi. If you don't know why that's disgusting and stupid, I'm not going to say why. I, in India, knew that somebody was trying to do trying to scam me, and I wanted to see what their scam was, so I let them kidnap me for a week. My dad was like, Jenna, can't you just get a boyfriend? By the time I was in South America, he wrote, where are you? I wrote, South America. I didn't realize how bratty I was being. And he wrote back, South America's not an answer. Where are you? Love you, Pa. So I was just a kid following their example, their guidance, and I was being incredibly stupid and uncommunicative. But I was fine. I moved home, and I was able to go home about once a month, and we would have these fabulous dinners. My mom's like a gourmet cook, and we'd have bottles of wine, and the grandmas would both be there, and we'd just spend the nights talking and really solidified that I very much use my parents as guidance, and how wonderful a time it really has been. And so when my dad passed away, my whole world was ripped out from underneath me. You know, there was a crack in the universe, was all that I knew. And my mom was a shell of a woman. My aunt, my grandma, my cousin all immediately got cancer. But my cousin's was quite serious. They all made it. But my grandma was great. She was like, oh, I'm barely even sick, like a cold. And even some of the pets, the family pets, were dying. And I just, the only answer I could have was the world was so dark from losing such a keystone, such an incredible figure as my father. And so how did I get out of it? I decided that I was going to get out of it by trying to build my own family. And so I got into a relationship with somebody that was actually not all that nice to me. But I held on because I knew that my family was my compass, and if I could recreate that, then I could recreate the happiness and everything that I had felt with my family. And some people were pretty blunt about the fact that they didn't like the relationship I was in, and others were a little bit more gentle about it. And one of my friends gave me a book, Eat, Pray, Love, and in that book, she writes to herself about how she'll always be there for herself, and she loves herself. And at the time I read it, it didn't really resonate with me, but by the time I was ready to leave that relationship that was not the healthiest, it did. And so I wrote to myself, I love you, I will never leave you, I will be there with you in your triumphs, and I will be there when you fall down until you can stand back up again. And that gave me incredible strength, and I was able to walk away from that relationship and start pulling myself out of that darkness that I had been in. And I don't know that I could have done that if it weren't taught to me partially through my dad's death. And there's, you know, when I submitted the story, there's a big part about how my dad was great about teaching, not through verbal, but through demonstrating. You know, he taught humility by sitting underneath the sunset. He taught compassion by how he interacted with people. He taught morality, but through his actions, not through his words. And so how I originally was going to finish up this story was to talk about the fact that I'm still getting guidance from him. I recently bought a house, and my dad, one of his idiosyncrasies was that he just loved auctions, and I bought my house at an auction. And I don't think that I would have had the strength to be buying a house at an auction if it weren't for him, and somehow this force was helping me. But that's not how I'm going to end it. The reason that I wanted to get up here and tell this story is not because I'm in drama or I'm a writer and I'm trying to promote something. This story is an acknowledgement to an incredible human being that I was so lucky to have in my life and love me and have me love him. But I've got to bring my grandma back into it this week. My grandma's been sick for about 2 months, a bacterial infection. Oh, grandma's going to get better. But she's been She's been sick. She's been in and out of the hospital. And today is her birthday. So my aunt was flying in, and she was supposed to get here on Saturday. And on Thursday, my cousin called me from California, and she said, "Can you pick up Mom tomorrow?" And I went, you know, what's going on? Well, Grandma's taken a turn for the worse. And so I took off work on Friday and was able to see my grandma. And she was actually doing pretty good. She was in her hospital bed sitting up and feisty and making jokes. And when she fell asleep, I came back up to Boise to get my aunt. And by the time I got back, Grandma had gone back to that state where my uncle decided to make that phone call to the family. And she's in that realm where she's been holding on. Mostly, I think at this point, she was holding on for her birthday, and she knows my brother's coming in from Thailand. My brother's lived in Thailand for about 7 years, and she keeps going, "Is Seth here yet? Is Seth here?" And such this incredible woman through all of the pain that she's in right now, the delirium she's in, she's still cracking jokes, and she's still locking eyes and saying, "I love you," and we all love her too. And so one of the things, I don't know, well, many of you have probably been through similar situations where when people are so sick, they start seeing people that have passed on. And what my grandma seems to have been doing is calling us all to her. My brother's coming, my aunt's here, and it's really given her some sense of peace. You can see that she's getting quieter knowing that we're all getting here. But she's also seen, you know, she wake up and say, "I saw Jack. That was my dad." I'm like, "Well, how's he doing? Is he doing good?" She'd nod. I mean, she's sick. She can't even drink from a straw right now. And she'd go, "Oh, Gladys," her sister, "Oh, Bill." And then she'd go, I want my mom. And she's in a state of delirium. And then she'd go, "Oh, there she is." And so in guidance, maybe it's not just parental guidance, maybe it's family guidance, where we're all coming to my grandma on, you know, the living or the dead. And I don't purport to know what happens after we die, if there's heaven or hell, or if there's a realm where there's whole souls, or if my grandma's just dreaming this stuff. But we're all coming to her to guide her in this journey. Thank you.
Thank you, Jenna, for being so brave and beautiful, even in the toughest times. Tonight, it's your turn to bare your soul, because tonight, our Story Studio continues with the free workshop designed to bring out your stories and your voice. This Monday, June 20th, stop by Colmar Coffee House in Bodo from 7 to 9 p.m. for ideas taught by me, Jessica Holmes, to learn the brainstorming that brings your stories out. Now, story slammer Richard Musler Wright passes down the story facts of life.
I guess I should have swore something more parental. Hi, my name's Richard, and there's this great scene in The Good and the Bad and the Ugly. Can we do, you know, I'd have you do The Good and the Bad and the Ugly right now. No, yeah, you have to picture. I put a lot of thought into this. You have to picture the scene. There's Blondie and Tuco. They're at the bridge on the river, and the Union, the Confederate armies are fighting it out, and it's all crazy. And Blondie looks at Tuco, and he goes, "You know, we're going to get through this with our own kind of crazy." That's. And that's sort of my parenting style. I'm going to get through it with my own kind of crazy. And one of the things that I sincerely believe about being a parent is I try to build scaffolding for my kids. I try to give them lots of different kinds of experiences. And this helps in that my wife works a swing shift, essentially. So I'm welcome to do anything I want with my kids. I have a 9-year-old and now a 6-year-old. I can do anything that I want as long as I bring the kids with me. Now, as you can imagine, this has led to some interesting choices. I have warm memories. In fact, just to give you some background, I took my daughter when she was 3 months old, and we explored the French Quarter of New Orleans. The street hustlers loved her. You know, it's like I was in dread fear of being robbed at any point. But, you know, they go, oh, you're carrying a baby. This is so awesome. I only have 5 minutes, so I can't tell you all the different places I've taken my children to. But to give you maybe two highlights was a couple of weeks ago, I had the opportunity to take my 5-year-old to Idaho Opera.
Nice.
Okay, well, come on. I took my child, like my son, to the opera, right? And it was at the Boise Art Museum, which was awesome because if we had to leave, I had to actually walk through the performers to get to the door. So I was throwing the dice, okay? You know, I just knew my 5-year-old was going to make it. He was going to love the opera. It was going to happen, you know? And as I was buying the tickets at the door, I heard this person say, oh, this father is so amazing. And I was going, they're not sitting next to us, are they? But this isn't the story I really wanted to tell. The story I want to tell tonight is actually a story night story. Probably a first. We have managed actually to come to almost all of the story nights to date. My son and myself, or my daughter and myself. And we actually went to the first official story night. How many were at that story night? You were. Okay. and we were actually, and I, you know, and I read about this in like the Boise Weekly or something, and it said all ages, and I said, oh, this will be awesome. You know, my son is an age. At that time, he was 4. You know, and okay, this will be awesome. So, and we were actually sitting right there, right where those guys are. Okay. I think the mic was actually a little bit closer. You know, and for those of you who weren't there for that first official general story, there was like a secret one before that. But for the first official general public story night, the theme was busted, getting caught in the act. And oh, but this is going to be good. And the first speaker got up and she told her story, and it was this wonderful kind of a Lake Wobegon-ish story about going back home after getting her master's. And my son, who had curls at the time, was so cute. He was just like, you know. And then we had the second speaker. And the second speaker was Nick Garcia. And I love Nick. Nick's a friend. And somebody back there loves Nick too. And Nick is the kind of guy who can make the phone book funny. And I was looking forward to hearing Nick come and tell his story, whatever it was. And Jessica got up here. And Jessica, you're part of the story too. Because you walked up here to the stage and you looked out and you're introducing Nick and you saw my son right there. And you knew what was going to come. And I wish there must be a videotape someplace because you froze. I'll do Jessica. Because she didn't know what to do at that point. because the program said all ages, and my son is an age, and he's sitting right there, and Nick Garcia, who's going to tell the story of being a peeping Tom. And Nick, now Nick, you know, he's an actor. I don't even think he knew we were there. He just told a story, you know, and he used the word penis, and he used the word vagina about 10 billion times. But the moral of the story was that my son paid not a lick of attention to it, and I think he was too busy charming the couples around us and borrowing, you know, drinks off their soda pops. But the moral of the story is I think to be a parent, you have to have your own brand of crazy and be fearless. So thank you.
Thank you for listening. Story Night is brought to you by presenting partner the Boise State Story Initiative, venue partner the Lennon Building, design partner Neighborhood All-Stars, and our broadcast partner, Boise State Public Radio. Please donate now at radio.boisestate.edu. Our Story Night theme and podcast production are by Dan Costello. Hear more at hearcostello.com. Please join us next week for an exclusive podcast teaser story for Air by the aforementioned musical genius, Dan Costello. And remember to buy your priority seating tickets for Air now at brownpapertickets.com. Learn more at storystorynight.org.